Imagine you are clicking buy on this $1,000 plane ticket. You know, the little loading wheel spins on your screen. The page freezes for a second, and then
The screen just goes completely white.
exactly, the screen just goes white, and you're sitting there like, did I just buy the ticket?
Right. Or did I accidentally buy it twice because I furiously clicked the button the second time?
Yeah, we've all been there. The modern internet is just this incredibly fragile house of cards, right? But we casually expect it to work flawlessly every single time we use it.
We do, yeah. But behind that single checkout click is honestly an absolute mountain of code. I mean, databases, third-party services, they are constantly changing, updating, and theoretically breaking.
Yeah, it really is a precarious system. And that's why I've been really looking forward to this, because the concept of browser automation sounds incredibly dry right up until you realize it is essentially the only thing keeping the modern internet from, collapsing under its own weight.
It really is. I
Yeah.
mean, a single changed line of code on a checkout page can accidentally sever the connection to the payment gateway or just break the login system entirely.
Wow. Yeah. So welcome to today's deep dive. Our mission today is to demystify this whole world. We are looking at a comprehensive 2026 guide titled Playwright Framework, Complete Automation Guide.
It's a great source.
It is. So whether you are a QA engineer trying to level up a developer, or just, someone who is insanely curious about how massive tech companies push updates 100 times a day without everything catching on fire, we are going to extract the foundational concepts, the architecture, and the best practices of Playwright.
And, to truly understand why a tool like Playwright is even necessary in the first place, you have to look at how much the web has fundamentally changed.
Right.
Like 10 years ago, a web page was mostly just a static document. You requested it, it loaded, and it's just kind of sat there.
Yeah, it was simple.
Exactly. But today, we are dealing with complex JavaScript frameworks, stuff like React and Vue. We have asynchronous API calls pulling data in the background without refreshing the page. We've got embedded iframes, multiple tabs communicating with each other simultaneously. The older automation tools, they simply outgrew their usefulness because they couldn't handle that speed.
Why
And
predictability?
exactly, they just break.
Okay, let's unpack this, because before we get to how the software actually, clicks buttons and fills out forms, the source material makes a really specific distinction.
Yes, between Playwright and Playwright Test.
Yes. Playwright itself is the open source browser automation technology, right? It's the engine that physically controls Chromium, Firefox, WebKit.
Right.
But throwing code at a browser isn't enough. The building a test suite without a framework is, well, it's like trying to build a skyscraper without scaffolding.
That's a really good way to put it.
Right, like it might stand up for a day, but it's gonna collapse the second the wind blows. You need a plan for the plumbing and the doors, not just a random pile of bricks.
That is a highly accurate way to look at it because, Playwright gives you the bricks, but Playwright Test provides that vital scaffolding
Gotcha.
as the end-to-end testing framework. It gives you the test runner, the assertions to check if things actually worked, the reporting, the test isolation. It just bundles all of that into one ecosystem.
Okay.
The architecture actually flows very logically. So a test runner manages the execution, which connects to the browser, which spins up a browser
The
context,
context, right?
which holds a page where you use a locator to find an element, perform an action like typing, and finally make an assertion to verify the result.
Okay, but I need to challenge this though, because from the outside looking in, browser automation isn't exactly a new concept.
No, it's not.
Right? Like, we have had Selenium for years and years. It is a massive industry standard. So, is Playwright just a modern, shiny copy of Selenium? Like, why reinvent the wheel if the wheel already works?
What's fascinating here is that while Selenium definitely pioneered this space with its WebDriver foundation, Playwright was built inherently for the modern asynchronous web from day one. With older enterprise tools, you often have to sort of stitch together a test runner, an assertion library, and reporting tools yourself.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, Playwright bundles all of that out of the box. But more importantly, it addresses the specific pain points of modern JavaScript-heavy applications.
Okay, so when you say it's built for the asynchronous web, you mean like things happening out of order, right?
Correct. So in the past, a page loaded from top to bottom, and when it was done.
Right.
Now you might load the shell of a page, and then, a split second later, a separate process fetches the user's profile picture. and another background process fetches the shopping cart total.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So if a test tries to click the cart before that specific piece of data arrives, the test just fails. Older tools really struggle with this unpredictable loading. Playwright anticipates it.
Which brings us perfectly to how this scaffolding actually interacts with a web page that is constantly shifting around. The source spends a lot of time on locators and auto-waiting.
Yes, crucial concepts.
Yeah, because in the olden days, you'd write a test that said, you know, find the third div, go down to the second span and click the button.
The worst.
Right. And the second a developer changed the font size or added an image, the test broke. But Playwright uses user-focused locators like get by role, get by label, or get by placeholder.
And this fundamentally changes what you are testing. Actually, wait, before we go further, it helps to understand the DOM.
Oh, yeah, the document object model.
Right. The DOM is essentially the underlying technical tree of elements that structures a web page. The user never actually sees the DOM.
Okay.
Older tests targeted that invisible structure. But Playwright encourages targeting what the user actually interacts with.
So wait, if a blind user relies on a screen reader to find a button by its role and name, Playwright can find it exactly the same way.
Yes, exactly. You use a command like get by role. For a button named login, it forces your test to behave like real humans using accessibility trees.
That is so smart.
Yeah, so if the underlying DOM structure changes drastically because a developer reorganized the code, but the button on the screen still says login, the test still passes, it makes the automation incredibly resilient.
I really love that concept, but the part that caught my attention even more was how it handles time.
Oh, the auto-waiting.
Yes, because using a fixed wait command, like telling the code to just sleep for 2 seconds, is called out in the guide as a terrible practice.
It really is.
And I was thinking about it like this. Using a fixed 2-second wait in your code is like telling a friend you'll wait exactly 2 minutes for them at a coffee shop before abandoning them.
That's a great analogy.
Right. Like if they arrive in 30 seconds, you've just stood there wasting 90 seconds for absolutely no reason. And if they hit traffic and arrive in 2 minutes and 1 second, you miss them completely. Playwright is basically the friend who just waits until they actually see you walk through the door.
Yes, yeah. And it solves the biggest nightmare for any engineering team, which is flaky tests.
Flaky tests.
A flaky test is one that, you know, passes sometimes and fails sometimes without the actual code even changing. It's almost always a timing issue. The server was a little slow or an animation took slightly too long.
Right.
If you use fixed waits, your tests will inevitably become flaky.
And when you have flaky tests, developers just stop trusting the automation entirely. Like, they see the red failure lights in their CI/CD pipelines, which are the systems that automatically test and deploy code, and they just ignore the warnings, assuming it's the test acting up again.
Which completely defeats the purpose of having a safety net in the first place.
Right. But how does Playwright actually know my friend walked through the door? Is it just rapidly pinging the browser every millisecond asking, "Are you done yet? Are you done yet?"
It's much smarter than that. When you tell Playwright to click a button, it hooks directly into the browser's internal event loop.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it automatically checks a strict list of actionability conditions. It verifies the element is attached to the document, that it has become visible, that it has stopped animating, and that it isn't, you know, obscured by another element.
Like a pop-up modal sitting right on top of it.
Exactly. It doesn't just blindly click coordinates on a screen.
Mm-hmm.
It passively waits for the browser to signal that the element is genuinely ready to receive a human-like interaction.
And then it finishes with an assertion. The source makes a great point that just clicking a button isn't a test. Verifying that the dashboard actually loaded after you clicked the button, that's a test.
Right. Actions perform iterations. Assertions verify the state. If you don't assert anything, you're just navigating through a page without proving the business logic actually worked.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. We've established how to reliably test a single action for a single user. But what happens when you have a massive enterprise app and you need to run like 1,000 tests?
That's the real challenge.
Yeah, they all require a user to log in, add something to a cart, and check out. If they all run at once, aren't they going to step on each other's toes? Like user A's cart accidentally gets user B's items?
To solve that scaling problem, Playwright introduces the concept of browser contexts.
Okay.
Think of a browser context like an entirely isolated incognito window. It has its own cookies, its own local storage, its own session information.
Mm.
Test A running in context A shares absolutely nothing with test B running in context B.
Okay, but wait. If we are isolating every single test and we have to boot up a completely fresh, empty browser for every single one of those 1,000 tests, doesn't that make the whole process incredibly slow?
It could, yeah.
Browsers are massive resource-heavy pieces of software that just eat up RAM.
This raises an important question, and it's exactly where Playwright's architecture avoids that bottleneck.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You aren't booting up a heavy brand new browser engine for every test. You launch the browser engine once.
Okay.
The browser contexts are incredibly lightweight, isolated environments created within that single browser instance. It takes mere milliseconds to create a new context.
Oh, so they share the engine, but they keep the memories completely separate?
Exactly. And this allows you to do true parallel testing. You can have a test runner spin up, say, 4 different workers on your machine.
Uh-huh.
Worker 1 handles tests 1 through 100. Worker 2 handles a 101 through 200. All running at the exact same time, completely isolated, without the massive CPU overhead of launching 100 actual Chrome browsers.
That is wild. The source also brings in something called fixtures here, right?
Ah, yes, fixtures.
If I'm understanding this right, if you have 50 tests that all need the user to be logged in, you obviously don't want to waste time typing in the username and password 50 separate times.
Definitely not.
So let's ground this. Is a fixture basically like handing a stage actor a fully dressed stage set? Like, instead of making the actor build the living room set piece by piece, hammering nails and painting walls before they can deliver their first line, you just drop the finished living room onto the stage and say, action.
That is an excellent way to visualize it. Yeah. In Playwright, you create a custom fixture that provides a pre-authenticated browser context.
Okay.
The test just asks for the fixture, and Playwright handles injecting that isolated, already logged in environment right as the test starts.
Wow.
Yeah, so the test focuses purely on the specific action it needs to verify, like adding an item to the cart, rather than all the busy work of logging in over and over. It keeps your framework incredibly clean and significantly faster.
But relying solely on the UI creates a massive blind spot, doesn't it?
It does.
Like, what if the checkout button works perfectly, but the server processing the payment is completely down?
Right.
Or, on the flip side, what if the backend is down for maintenance, but we still really need to test a new front-end feature? The source dives into peeking under the hood with API testing and network mocking.
Testing only the browser is just inefficient. Modern applications are multi-layered. You have the UI, the API, which is how the front-end talks to the backend, the server logic, and the database.
Yeah.
Playwright can actually send HTTP requests directly to an API, completely skipping the browser.
And the guide suggests combining them.
Yes.
Let's say you want to test a checkout flow. You need a test user with a specific billing address and an item already in their cart. If you do all of that through the UI clicking to create the user, clicking to fill out the address, searching for the item, that setup alone might take like 15 seconds.
Really?
But if you use the API to inject that data directly into the database, it takes milliseconds. Yeah. You use the API to prepare the state, and then you use the UI to test the actual business flow of clicking checkout.
It saves massive amounts of time and makes the tests much less fragile.
Okay, but I have a serious problem with the guide's next recommendation.
Which one?
Network interception and mocking, where you literally fake the backend responses.
Right.
Wait, if we are mocking the network, aren't we basically cheating?
Cheating.
Yeah. We aren't testing the real application anymore. We are testing a fake version of it.
I mean, it does feel like cheating at first glance. But you aren't mocking the network to pretend everything is fine. You are mocking the network to test the edge cases that are dangerously hard to intentionally trigger on a live backend.
Okay.
It is about scientific isolation.
But if I'm feeding the front end fake data, how do I know it will actually work when the real server plugs back in? I could run a test that passes perfectly against a fake server, and then it explodes in production.
Well, you don't replace all your tests with mock data. You use mock data for specific isolated scenarios.
Like what?
Think about a catastrophic 500 server error. For the listeners, HTTP status codes communicate how a network request went 200 means success, 404 means the page wasn't found, and 500 means the server basically crashed.
Right, the dreaded 500 error.
Exactly. So how do you prove that your beautifully designed React front end gracefully handles a 500 server error without completely freezing the user's browser?
It's very hard to force your real production backend to break on command just for a test.
Ah, I see. You intercept the outgoing network requests and say, when the front end asks for the product list, immediately return a 500 server error.
Yes.
Now you can verify that your UI displays the correct please try again later message instead of just hanging forever on a white screen.
Exactly. You are proving the front end is resilient. You isolate the variables. And speaking of isolating variables, transitioning smoothly here. The guide highlights the debugging tools, specifically the trace viewer.
Right, the trace.
So when a test fails in your CI/CD pipeline at 3 a.m., you know, a screenshot is nice, a video is helpful, but the trace viewer captures the exact state of the DOM, the network activity, the console errors, and every locator used at every single millisecond of the test.
That sounds like a black box flight recorder for your tests.
That is exactly what it is. Oh. You aren't just watching a video of the failure. You could literally drag a timeline slider back and forth to inspect what the underlying page code looked like exactly right before, during, and after the failure.
That is incredible.
It completely eliminates the, well, it worked on my machine excuse, because you have a portable snapshot of the exact environment where it failed.
So what does this all mean? We have all these incredible superpowers, auto-weighting, isolated context, API mocking, flight recorders. It sounds perfect.
It's very powerful.
But the source has a whole section on building for the real world and avoiding the traps. Because with all these features, it's very easy to build a messy, overly complex framework. How do we make sure we don't shoot ourselves in the foot?
The guide is very practical here. The most common mistake is over-engineering.
Oh, sure.
People read about design patterns like the page object model, where you separate all your locators into distinct reusable page classes, and they think they need to implement it to look professional. So they build hundreds of files and folders for a project that only needs like 10 tests.
Yeah, the guide warns not to overcomplicate things just for the sake of complexity. It lists other massive red flags too, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Like relying on unstable locators tied to CSS classes that change every week, or hard coding passwords directly into the test files instead of using secure hidden environment variables.
Yes. And perhaps the biggest trap of all is making tests dependent on each other.
Oh, how so?
If test two only passes because test one happened to leave a specific item in the cart, your suite is a ticking time bomb. The moment you try to run them in parallel or change the run order, everything fails.
Right.
Independence is critical. Every test should be able to run on its own in any order.
That makes total sense. The advice on the learning path is great too. Don't jump to framework architecture on day one. Learn the basics, understand locators, and then build a real project, like a mock e-commerce flow.
Yeah, get your hands dirty.
And check it into Git, you know, the version control system. A good framework isn't the one with the most folders. It's the one that is easy to write, easy to debug, and most importantly, easy to scale.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it's really about building a sustainable engineering culture. And the guide actually touches on the future here, noting that Playwright is integrating deeply with AI.
Oh, wow. AI.
Yeah. Things like Playwright MCP, which allows AI models to directly control the browser and VS Code tooling. It means AI can help write the initial boilerplate or suggest robust locators.
Which is wild to think about. An AI writing tests for a human interface.
It is. But the guide is very firm on this. AI is a productivity booster, not a replacement for testing fundamentals.
Right.
If you don't understand why a fixed weight is bad or why tests need to be isolated in contexts, an AI is just going to help you write a terrible, flaky framework much faster. The human architectural knowledge is more important than ever.
You have to know the rules before you can let the machine write the code. Well, this has been an incredible journey. We've gone from understanding Playwright as not just a tool, but an entire automation ecosystem. We've explored the underlying DOM to see why we need to say goodbye to brittle, fixed weights and embrace dynamic user-facing locators.
Yeah.
We've looked at how to scale up safely using isolated browser contexts and how to blend the speed of API testing with the reality of UI testing.
It really is a masterclass in controlling chaos.
It is. And for you listening, whether you ever write a line of Playwright code or not, the underlying concepts here are universally applicable.
Absolutely.
The idea of isolating variables so they don't corrupt your results, the importance of targeting the stable, meaningful parts of a system rather than just the superficial structure, separating your raw data from your business logic, these are mental models for problem solving that extend far beyond a code editor.
Good architecture is good architecture no matter what you are building.
Exactly. It makes you look at the internet entirely differently. Which brings me to a final thought for you to chew on. We talked about the AI-assisted future of this ecosystem. If the Playwright framework gets so advanced that an AI can automatically observe user behavior, write the tests, generate the robust locators, and mock the backend networks entirely on its own, does the role of the QA engineer shift from actually finding the bugs to simply deciding which human experiences are actually worth testing in the first place? Think about that next time you click checkout.